This is the Canadian Society of Cinematographers podcast. Join us as Canada's cinematographers discuss the tools and techniques they use in shaping the aesthetics of their current projects.
This podcast features Director of Photography Brett Van Dyke, CSC, in conversation with Carolyn Wong of the CSC Executive. Today, he talks about his latest production, Backstage, and how he got into the business.
Okay, it's we're here with Brett Van Dyke, CSC, and it's February 25th to 2016. And we're here, we're going to talk about Backstage, where you came from. And so, Brett, now Backstage, we can start with Backstage, or we can start with how you got in the biz.
Let's start with how I got in the biz. So, yeah. My father was a film editor, and my mother was in advertising. Well, my mother was kind of in film through and then into advertising. So, growing up, I always thought that I'd be kind of projected into the film business because my parents were there. I didn't think I wanted to do anything else, so after high school, a little bit of backpacking, a little bit of time out west, I came back to a post-production company. I worked at Command Post and Transfer for a number of years, on and off, while I banked some cash and would backpack. Then they merged Medallion Film Labs and PFA together, and so when that happened, I was their go-to, I guess we called them back in the days, gophers. I would take NEG to the NEG cutters. I would take NEG to Command Post for Transfer. And so not that I knew I would probably get into being a cinematographer, but I took a lot of photos backpacking. I had a Canon EOS Rebel. We shot film. I got into color infrared, black and white infrared, cross-processing, and got on the processing side of things. Then when I left that post-production side of things, I became a PA. Indirectly through a connection my mom had. Then I started being a grip. Then I started being electric. Then I started shooting. And while I still was an electric and became a best boy, I was hoarding film and putting it in my fridge and shooting on the weekends and with people on set who wanted to be a director, whether it was a props guy, whether it was whoever, we just kind of said, okay, let's come up with some ideas. Pitch a little money into it and start building our reels. So basically that's my, you know.
But what appealed to you about being a cinematographer? Like that you wanted to shoot for these people. What made it? I mean, was it the electric and seeing how things are lit and going, I can do that?
Like, absolutely. I had an epiphany one day on set. I was like, or actually when I walked outside from doing lighting for many years, I was like, this is how it is. And then since then, I looked at light a different way, whether the sun came up and went down or it was artificial light or it was natural light or anything. So I think from there, I saw the DP's job, but like probably that is the coolest job to have because the experience running the set, controlling all the departments or controlling the technical departments, working closely with the directors and producers. So you're basically speaking to every single person on set, even to the production assistant who's moving the garbage can for you that's in the way. So I think that's what kind of, and it was definitely that comfy seat on the dolly that I said, one day I think I could be there. Instead of laying this track, I'm going to be sitting on that dolly. And a lot of the gaffers I worked for said, they say, you have the energy for this and you have a projecting, your voice projects that you can probably... If you go for it, I would say go for it. And to get back to when I worked for Medallion, when I was building my reel, I was getting the processing done for nothing. I was getting a transfer at Command Post done for nothing. And my brother's a film editor as well, so my brother was editing the spec spots for us for nothing. So I had big connections on the back end to build the reel. Back in the day, you had to hoard 35 mil, and I had to call Mike Sinclair at White's and get an Airy 3 or a BL, whatever we needed that day. And then it turned into Jerry at Panavision, and all these connections I had helped me build my reel. And then I would shop it around at executive producers and say, this is my stuff, and you'd get you know, one executive producer would say, yeah, it's all exterior. You need some interiors. And then one producer would say, it's all interiors. You need some exteriors. So I learned from people telling me what I needed to show on my reel. And this is just advertising based. I wasn't narrative or long format.
So you were aiming for more commercials.
I was just aiming for commercials and then also as well as music videos. I saw the real creative outlet there with minimal resources. So what can you do with this toolbox? Here's $1,500 for lighting and here's your Arri SR. Go out and make a music video. So I learned how to work on a scale of here's big money, go shoot a big budget music video, and here's smaller money, what can you do for that? So I think that helped me in my advertising game, where to spend the money properly, and I think that helped me out to even what I do today. When producers say one thing I never do is bring a camera case that never gets opened. That's one thing I try. Obviously, sure, you need the underslung, because maybe the director, when I'm scouting with them, I'll be like, do we need a zoom? No zoom, it's gone away. Don't even bring it. Because Optimals cost $1,000 now, and they're hard to get. Usually the shows have them. It's hard to get the big zooms these days, so that's like one of my kind of things. I'll never really... Oh, and same with lighting, too. I'm not going to bring a lighting, because what if...
I guess you're like a producer's dream DP.
I hear that. Some people on the back end do tell me that. It's like, you know, like the last job I just did, I came in with a lighting setup, and they were like, it costs you way too much. I said, you know what? How much money do you have? I said, here's X amount of dollars. I said, this is where we light it. And I still came in $400 under.
Hey.
So maybe I will be a good producer, too. You never know. Yeah.
Now, what's your recent project?
Currently, I am shooting a second unit on Dark Matter.
Oh, let's back up. I want to get to backstage.
Sorry.
So let's say, what is the project that you just finished?
I recently wrapped a show called Backstage, and we shot the summer of 2015. We shot 8 weeks. You basically got to shoot the show when kids are off school.
That's right. So I'll just read roughly what it's about.
Yeah.
It follows a group of outstanding, talented teenagers as they live through the highs and lows that come with attending a prestigious art school. Diary-style confessionals and dramatic cliffhangers follow them as they deal with their day-to-day realities.
That's exactly what it is.
How did the job come to you?
The job came to me from the showrunner and director, Lara Azapardi. I shot a couple spots for her years ago when she was at a local production company in Toronto. She went off and was writing for a number of episodic shows. They came to me or to my agent and said, are you interested in doing this show? So basically I read the paragraph and went and met with the producer, Brian Irving, and he said, do you want to shoot the show? And I was basically over coffee. He said, you can drive away and think about it. And basically over coffee, I said, I'll shoot the show. I loved the energy he had, his credits he already had. I knew that there would be success behind this show. From coming only to shooting second unit episodic, I thought this was an opportunity for me to shoot main unit and get more experience that way episodic. So it was really... I wanted to shoot the show before I even had the meeting.
Nice.
So there was also that behind me. I wasn't going to be picky about exactly what it was.
Right, you knew what the advantageous.
Yeah.
To
not that I was looking for more credits. Right. I knew this was going to be a great show. Mm-hmm. And I knew Laura was attached to it too. So as a showrunner, I said this show will have legs.
Yeah, there was a lot of good places.
Absolutely.
It set in.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of who did you discuss? Like, is it a single director for the whole series? Like, who did you discuss mostly, like, the creative approach, like the lighting and the look?
The look was very specific from Brian Irving and Lara Azapardi, showrunner. They wanted this very specific look. Like, you have to appeal to kids these days. The demographic of the show is 7 to 13-year-olds. They said to me, they're all watching reality television. So we want to come off like we've just turned the cameras on and we're just following these kids at school around. So that was their look. They also, Friday Night Lights came up a lot in the discussions. They wanted to make it look like gritty and raw, like Friday Night Lights. We want to not worry about access. Didn't matter about coverage. They could care less if they could get coverage and overs and stuff like that. We ended up getting every single over and coverage throughout we shooting because that's narrative. We just wanted to tell the story And the best way to tell it is with coverage. You can't just sit on a two-shot when they're speaking three pages. You know, kids are done. They're going to turn the channel. So that their look was very specific. So I also said to them, we have to come across with a very natural approach. So these kids, they'll have marks that they have to hit. But I want them to have flexibility because actors go to where they want to go sometimes. Sometimes you can't just, like, pigeonhole an actor to make, there's your mark where you start, here's your mark where you end. They sometimes say, why am I standing here? I need to move. So we wanted to go big, the biggest, softest source I could possibly put in within the frame. That's the lighting approach I went with. Very natural, no backlight, no top light. That was kind of our kind of mantra we had. And I do want to add that after I was brought on the show, they said to me that you're going to shoot 30 episodes in 30 days. And I'm like, well, how's that going to happen? We're going to run two main units at the same time. I said, okay, has this been done before? Yes, it's been done before on big shows. I think Heroes did that and some other shows kind of went that way. Two units in the same location simultaneously. I was like, well, we've got to be outside. One's got to be outside, one's got to be inside, one's got to be on the end of the school, we'll be at the end of school. Okay, it's fine. It's going to work. So on that note, they're like, who is another DP you want to bring on to alternate episodes with? I said, well, okay, let me go back to guys that I know and guys that I work with and guys that I think will be great for the show. Because personality goes a huge way in filmmaking. You want somebody with a great personality who's going to get along with everybody. Some guys aren't like that. There are DPs out there that, you know, are just kind of in their, maybe their old ways or different personality that sometimes their footage looks great on screen, but behind the camera sometimes they don't have the best personality. So I went for personality first and then looked at a couple guys. And we brought on Fraser Brown, awesome DP. I'm not sure if he's CSC. I don't think so, but that could change. Young guy, music video guy. My operators who I was currently working with on a show at the time, I threw out a couple names to them, you know, in the camera truck after rap. I threw out a few names and they all jumped off their seat when I said Fraser. So right away he was on the top to be the alternating DP. I was creating the look, but Fraser was going to jump in and be not like a second unit, but also be a main unit running with a full crew and doing their own episodes. So
it was two units,
yes,
shooting,
so
like
again,
on the same day.
Absolutely. We had two main units shooting simultaneously. We shot two episode blocks in 4 days. 1 day drama, 1 day performance. Because they get paid different scale actors when they start singing and dancing than they will actually when they're just speaking.
Oh.
So the AD department had a schedule, very, very tight schedule, like we're going to do drama this day, performance next day. Music this day and drama the next day. So it was very, you know, they had a huge, you know, undertaking just to even kind of make our days. And again, I'm going to say that we shot 13 pages a day. We had so little time to shoot scenes, you know, by the end of your day, filmmakers always need more time. It's just nature. Like, you rarely get a lot of time. Maybe in advertising you get more time than in episodic, but we never had enough time. The last scene of the day was always, you know, we're shooting in 25 minutes. We always got our days. Like, we never carried over a scene throughout our 15 episodes. 15 for B unit and 15 for A main unit.
Wow, that's impressive because they're scheduling the tight schedule with the divisions that you're talking about. Then for you, as a DP, I mean, your lighting, you're not getting probably not a lot of time to light.
Not a lot of time to light. And I was operating B cam.
Okay. So who was A cam? Was it
Dave T. Sheridan operated B cam, or sorry, operated A cam on my unit. And then Joe Turner operated A cam on the other unit, B unit.
Right. And then you would do B camera on A unit.
Yeah. I would basically, we would set up both cameras. So the whole show, handheld, easy rigs. Just, we'd set up on, you know, we called them fishes. We basically put them on base plates, line up the shot, A and B. I'd light it, tweak it. Dave would grab his camera. I'd grab mine and we'd go. Little quick rehearsals. Quick rehearsal with second team and then right into A. Another thing was great about the show, they're not giving people a lot of time. Keeps the kids in character. These kids are 14, 16 years old. A lot of them were brought on the show because they could sing first then and dance. Then they were actors. Some of them were triple threats or double threat that already had the acting chops and they were ballet and they could dance. Same with the music side of things. Music and ballet never crossed in the hallways, never crossed in episodes. So that was an easy way to shoot it because one side's doing music, the other side's doing dance. There never was a crossover. Maybe in coming seasons they'll cross over, but the initial season one, no one crossed over. So that made it a little easier for us to achieve.
Yeah, well, it looks great because it's naturalistic. It's natural source. They all look great. I mean, mind you, they're 14. But just you tell me now this what you're going through. It looks great. You've achieved it.
Yeah, I think so too. Everyone's super happy. Got sold to Disney. Got sold to Disney worldwide. 2017 is going to be around the world, 80 countries. The show is so well written that it's going to appeal to the demographic as well as the parents making dinner at 7 o'clock or cleaning up dinner from the kids. Now they've gone to the television to watch the show. They're going to get drawn into it because basically it's a soap for kids, but they don't know it's a soap. They don't even know what a soap is, actually. Soap's kind of moved on, but that's what it is. And it's just, when I was reading the scripts, like basically you're cramming a script. They only came out with 1 to 15 to start. So once we went into production, we had 1 to 15 to read. And when you're getting to your later episodes, you're just getting through the scripts on the weekend. So it was very long. I'd even had my wife read the scripts to me while we drove to the cottage. Right? It's just to get through them so I didn't have to read them all weekend, right? Just to find out where the character is there. You know, as a DP, sure, you need to know where the characters are. You got to really work with the director to really find these kids because these kids were amazing. They're so super talented. The cast is incredible.
Oh, I could see it.
That's why it's going to have great success.
I could see it because I was wondering how that was going to be tackled. Then I'm watching it and it's like, they're doing it. This is them. So I'm thinking, how did they cast that? It was like, oh yeah, it must have been like you say, dancing.
Yeah, it's right. Like their profession came first, or their craft came first, and then it was acting after that. Of course, there were acting coaches. As soon as he yelled cut, they were acting coach would basically grab them, take them aside for that 10 minutes they only had between. These kids had 4 episodes in their brain, because they're shooting my 2 episodes, then they're going down the hall and shooting the other 2 episodes with the other unit. Another great thing that the pilot director, RT, Randall Thorne, came up with, he said, we should shoot, instead of shooting 1, 2 as our first episodes, we should shoot 5, 6 the first days. So the kids later 5, 6, it doesn't matter because the viewer doesn't see them trying to figure themselves out as a character 1, 2. So we shot 5, 6 first and then went back on that same block and shot 1, 2.
Well, that's interesting.
Very smart idea. That came up in prep and I was like, that's a great idea. Because if these kids aren't on, that gives them a little bit of wiggle room in a few episodes. They had 4 scripts in their brain. So that's why they're super talented because, you know, you give it to a lot of actors, I'm sure they couldn't pull it off. I can't believe they pulled it off. One of the directors in prep said, if these kids don't have their lines, we're not going to make our days. It's plain and simple.
So technically, like, how did you, was there any pre-rigging? Like, did you, the fluorescence in the school? Because you were obviously shooting in the summer, so you could have the location. Did you carry around a key light that you just used for them all? And, like, what was that? What was that set up?
Basically, our idea was, if we don't see a fluorescent, it is off. We wanted to kind of get, if you look at Friday Night Lights, which is a great reference, they shot in the dark a lot of the time. You look at the hallways, it's dark. There's a kicker at the end of the hallway that's flaring the lens. And we use that a lot. We're like, let's just use these flares and use a big source that's sitting on the ground and kids kind of walk through. I called my background cast moths. I was like, you're moths. You're just going towards this light and just keep weaving in front of this light because that brings the flare in, brings the flare out, and it just worked magically. Sometimes within a take, you're just like, the flare goes away, it comes back. But what we did was, the biggest, softest source possible. So getting, and you're working in hallways, right? So you're working in these hallways that are very narrow, very long. So we would, splash HMIs for depth on walls in the back, or use parkans or something like that, something with a hot spot somewhere. So work back from our background to our foreground. And the foreground, basically, it's a new technology, MacTech LEDs. They make fluorescent tubes that are LED. They're called ladder lights. It's a 4-foot tube strung, 16 of them together. I built 2 4x8 custom frames and strung the ladder lights in there. So basically, I had a 4x8 softbox. We used a lot of muslin, a lot of white duve, a lot of trace, like triple diffuse these lights so they could be super soft. you find now, like, I triple diffuse everything, sometimes four times. The light cannot be soft enough for me right now. It's like the shadows on people's nose are just like, oh my God, it drives me crazy. So we just made the super soft source and we just wheeled these things around.
For dance,
I built basically it was an 18 by 25 soft source. Again, with these MacTech LEDs, they're a 4x4 fixture, and I had three of them, built a 15 by frame that covered all three of them. We could have 216 on it or put trace on it, then through light grid, and then I would bring white duve when we got really close. I would drive this thing as close as I could. So it would wrap 25 feet around them from their nose to their back of their head. And that gave that flexibility for the dancer to move, for they could walk to the door and come all the way back 20 feet and they'd still be in this beautiful soft light.
Right, you wouldn't have all these shadows crossing
You only just put a couple sliders on the thing and away you went. We would bring in blanket lights to continue this wrap around. So you could kind of, you know, if you didn't want to move the big, we called it the monster. If you didn't want to move the big monster around, we could just bring, you know, a blanket light to wrap around into the second eye when we just kind of move in for a close-up. So I always had one of them turned off behind the big monster, and we just wheel it in and wrap to the double eye to get that second eye, get that twinkle in the eye during a close-up.
Well, you guys must have been a machine then. Like, once you had that system set up, it was like you know what it was, and wherever you got, you just get them in.
Basically, during blocking, the gaffer and the key grip would sit there and know exactly how we were going to light it because it was such a formula. Yeah, sure, there were, you know, different things to do with accent and other things if we were, you know, anytime we had a, the great thing about the school, it has a huge courtyard and it has huge long hallways with glass, 6 foot glass, man, it's like floor to ceiling glass. So we just kind of 18, 18, 18, 6K, 6K and just super soft. Double silks, light grids, and just continue this huge soft source. So we created like a 30-foot soft source. You know, maybe as the HMIs trickled off, the diffusion got thinner, so the kids in the background had a little more twinkle.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. And then basically, we would turn that system off and move into a classroom, and then the other unit would come and just turn that system on. We never really moved. They used our lights, we used theirs, right?
Well, perfect. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
What was your camera package?
We went with Amira just because of the lightweight. Amira was still quite new at the time. It was only a few months old. We decided to go with Fujinon Cabrios because the 19-90 is such a great lens. We wanted something that we could just be on the zoom stick. We always recorrect in frame during emotion or during drama. Like we'd sit back on a 27 or a 40, depending which A or B camera, and we'd always crash into the 90. When emotion or drama came in. So that was basically it. Two Amiras and 19-90s. And I there wasn't a lot of money for the show, so Post wanted 2K. They were talking C300 at the start, and then Post wanted a little more for resizing later. So we worked back and said, you know what, let's just use the Amira, and we'll go with more inexpensive glass. Which usually I try to go with the most expensive glass and then work back on the sensor after. This kind of, we went the other way. I went with the Amira as a lightweight Alexa Pro, or, you know, Airy product. And then we just used Zeiss CP2s was our prime. We never used primes. We used primes basically only when, if you see in the show, there's little, you know, transitionals. There's like paintbrushes and ballet feet and dancers in the hallway. We use primes there so we could shoot wide open. And just have the shallowest depth of field possible. We shot the whole show 2.9. Like, basically, okay. We never had a stop. I would have a few stops in the back pocket if we ever had a huge walk down the hallway and we had no time. Basically, gave the focus puller another stop. I'll tell you, Karwai Ng, who was a camera focus puller, you would never need another stop, and you would never have to even think it would ever be out of focus. And he never is out of focus. I hate to, you know, it's like, hopefully I'm not jinxing him today wherever he is, but you could be doing the biggest shot. We did a Steadicam that went through the whole school. And if the cast, if they made it an error, then we'd reset, but you never had to worry about Karwai.
Well, you want to keep that. You want to keep that assistant.
Exactly. It's like I've already texted them, thinking, okay, they're writing season two, so you might want to. Hopefully, your summer's available. The show is not a great tier, so sometimes your tier tells you who your crew is going to be, depending on money, right? And I've been working with these guys for a couple of years, so they all kind of were jumped on ship. And it's like we go to summer school, and it's a great summer job.
So it was all handheld?
Whole show handheld. You'll notice some dollies and stuff. We did dollies down the hallways, but still handheld on the dolly. You know, you get the captain's chair on the end of the dolly and push them around. A lot of wheelchairs, a lot of wheelchair handheld. But yeah, basically it was handheld the whole show.
And was there any, like, sort of consistent challenges that would drive you crazy that always seemed to come up that
consistent challenges, the time.
It's just time.
Never have time. The 80s are always like, you're always a half an hour behind, right, before lunch. It's like, we're half an hour behind. It's like, we're always a half an hour behind. But you always make up time. You always make up time in the afternoon. You know, hour 3 in the afternoon, they're like, everyone's looking at their watch, you're thinking, okay, well, where can I save time here? You can save time in your blocking and tell the director, it's like, we got 3 strips to do, we got 3 hours. So where do we want to spend our time? We want to spend it on this strip? Okay, that's where we'll work our time. Now let's just compress this a little more. They don't come down the hallway. They're here already. They're on the lockers. Have them sit down.
So reflect.
I'll never move. That'll save some time.
So this is a good segue into, you know, your background in music videos and commercials and then your second unit work, like how that contributed to the lot of second work unit work that you have done in the past and that you still do. You know, how do you like that work and how is that feeding each other?
I really enjoy the episodic. It's like different muscle memory than advertising. Advertising is a totally different mindset when you walk on a set. I just think it's a different house. You know, there's one house on the street that does advertising and the next house does episodic. And it's two totally different muscle memories. So I get the chills again. I haven't had the chills in like 15 years. Like, you know, the first big commercial you get 15, 17 years ago, you're shooting film, right? It's like, whoa, it's a lot on the line here. And you don't want to screw it up. So those chills, those butterflies, I'm getting again in episodic, which is good. You know, it's like, Now you're enjoying it again. Because maybe you get comfortable. You do it for 15 years, you probably feel the comfort level that you can, you know, you can walk in a set and you know your job, right? But when you walk, especially doing second unit too, now I have to maintain the look of the show. I can't just come up with my own ideas, like just start lighting it the way I want to light it. You know, I'm very in contact with the DP, not on a daily basis because they're quite busy. I know how it is shooting a show. It's like you don't have a lot of time except for maybe your family when you're up or watching dailies. It's like usually I'd wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch dailies over my coffee and then get ready for my day, you know. But so yeah, so second unit, I love it because I'm keep maintaining the look of the show. The second unit I'm doing is, they're like main units. They're full crews. We're not shooting inserts. We're shooting full cast, big scenes, you know, shooting 6 to 8 pages a day. And that's like a luxury coming from what backstage was when we're doing 11 and 13 pages a day. But then getting back to doing, second unit allows me to do commercials still. I've kind of gotten out of the music videos just because I'm just not one of the guys anymore. Like I was 15 years ago when, you know, it's like there were only a handful of us.
Yeah, that's right.
Now there's technology. There's, you know, the technology's at more fingertips. It's easier to start shooting than when I started shooting. You know, I basically, you know, you can buy a camera and go shoot. Back in the day, you couldn't get the Aries and you had to get the film stock and all that stuff so there are more guys out there and they're doing great work. And because the technology's, it's more accessible, I guess, is the word.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. I mean, we don't have to beg and borrow equipment and save up film. Yeah. And then
when there was only 40 DPs in Toronto, now there's probably 4,000 because just the technology.
Yeah, I agree. Now, is there anything else you want to add?
I don't know. Did I really get into the second unit work a lot? I think.
Well, not enough. It's like what was, because you know you were looking forward to doing backstage because you were going to be in charge of the full episode,
exactly.
And sort of
and
jumping out.
Of look, you know,
and be in charge of a look opposed to servicing a production, which is great because I think that takes a talent in itself for a second unit person to say, I'm not here to try and be a star. I'm here to help complete your show.
That's just what you said there. I'm not here to be a star. I'm just here to complete the show. That keeps me working because a lot of producers I've talked to, they're like, we love the way you work because you're not building your reel. You're not changing, coming up with your own ideas. You're getting our days. You're getting the days plus. Sometimes we're shooting targets. And so that keeps you working, especially second unit.
Yeah.
You cannot reinvent the wheel. There's no time. You got to come in with a small, limited amount of resources. You can't load lighting trucks. You can't load the package truck or load the camera truck. I even strip down the camera lenses now and only bring out, I tell the second unit directors a lot of time, let's just use four lenses. The shows basically shoot with four lenses, you know. It's like, yeah, you need, you know, a couple other increments doing the due to the size of the set, or you don't have the wall room to get back. But, yeah, and then sometimes the director's like, where's that one lens? Like, well, we didn't bring it. And then he's like, that's right, okay, let's put this one on. So another two, stripping money back, you know, again, like, that's back to where I started. It's like, they don't bring a case unless it gets opened.
Well, it's effective, and that's what I say. You could... You know, someone could make a good half career just, you know, doing the second unit.
Absolutely. I would, guys make full careers at second unit, you know.
Yeah.
And it allows me to, time for family. Mm-hmm. There are a couple days off during the week. And that's what I'm kind of used to, is coming from commercials, is, you know, your busy years, you're shooting 80 to 100 days. You're not so busy years or less than that. So I'm still, you know, it's like, it's, I got the best of both worlds. Can be with the family. Can still shoot second unit, can slug in some commercials that come my way if the dates work. You know, it's been pretty busy lately back in commercials, I think because of our low dollar and all that. So there's a lot of commercial work. So January was honestly one of my busiest years to date. Well, my busiest months to date. January's
right.
Never busy.
Well, what's it?
You do 6 days maybe or four.
Nothing's worse than, like, you know, a main unit DP having to, like, wrestle with their second unit. And it's like...
Right, absolutely.
There's nothing where they don't have time to deal
with
that.
When you don't hear any notes, that's great. No news is good news, you know? There's always a note. It's like, here, could you just do this or just do that? Or, like, if you're on the same set, Craig will come down the hallway and say, gee, you just got to do this, and he'll run off again.
Yeah.
Get little notes. You need notes.
You do.
You know, you need notes.
How
like,
you accomplish the
exactly, because then you know going into your next... whatever, that's maybe that's the same set or the same room, it's like, okay, I got to do this.
So, I mean, it could change. I mean, luckily, you know, backstage is just a summer, 2 months you shoot
summer
in?
Summer job, yeah.
2 months.
We shoot for 2 months, yeah. We prep for 2 weeks and shoot for 7 weeks.
Yeah, and that'll probably not change, and so you still
The
rest of the year to play around.
That's right, exactly.
You want. That's awesome. You have the perfect,
So right now I'm in a good spot, you know, I can't complain.
That's
doing a job I love and... you know, working with great people.
So, any tips for new DPs, you think? Anything you want to add?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask this, actually. I just had a...
A what?
I knew you were going to ask this, and I had a thought, and I'll bring back the question in for editing purposes.
For a DP starting out today, it's a totally different landscape than when it was. When I started shooting and when you started shooting, you can get your work out there seen more and it's easier to post and shoot it. But the challenges of, are you going to be hired for, you know, big jobs, or there's so many reality shows and documentaries out there that, you know, they can fill it. I mean, there's just so much material out there now.
Yeah, there is a lot of content that needs to be filled and I can see guys probably getting, you know, their chops in reality. And hey, I never started doing documentary or anything like that where you got to grab the camera ready to go out of the porta brace. But I did a documentary in Egypt and I had limited crew and I was like, I don't know how these guys do it. I'm telling you. It is tough, man.
It's different.
We were doing a BBC One shoot. It had some decent amount of money. And the production wanted to bring on more of a stylized commercial DP rather than a documentary guy. And when I was in Egypt, I'm like, why did you want guys like us? They wanted more for visuals. All the stuff beyond the talking was heavy visual, heavy composition, grads, the whole bit. Like, you know, we really stylized the in-between bits of people talking, man, but boy.
But what was crushing you?
How to shoot a scene in a documentary? Just when you have a camera and one guy talking to camera, it is tricky.
Oh, you like got the talking head part.
No, not the maybe it's the narration or the sequence. Sorry,
yeah.
I don't know the terminology, but it's the sequence that I couldn't get. When I had the Skype interview, I always said to him, "I'll be way ahead of you running to get the shot," And then when I was there, man, boy, was I wrong.
Well, there's an art to it.
You know, yeah, there's a huge art to it.
And knowing how to
sure.
get it for the editor, what they need, understand. It's more of a thinking thing. You have to understand what is trying to be achieved. What's the scene about? What's this event that you're going to? And the director says, just go. And you just got to run around and get stuff. And
absolutely, man. I praise these documentaries. Now that I watch a lot of more documentaries now, I'm just like, man, this is a great documentary. And the guy. Always a great documentary or a great film is when I'm into the story now. And I get myself out of the technical aspect. Because usually you get stuck in the technical parts of a movie. It's like, you know, you're watching the camera move. And it's like, okay, we're on a dolly now. Okay, now we're walking. So usually, you know, when I'm not looking for technical bits, it's a really good story. And getting back to probably the tip of young DPs or young cinematographers coming up, I always just surrounded myself with guys that knew more than I did. And I still tried it. I still do that. You know, I'm maintaining crews now. Crews are coming to me usually in second unit because it'll be one of the guys from main unit usually will the guys with experience will come out and do second unit. It's not like I can bring my own crews. So I'm getting guys that have 30 years experience. So I'm learning a lot from them every day too. And that's why, you know, that's why I enjoy doing the second unit stuff because I continue to learn and the butterflies are still there. Because when you're, you know, you're shooting a $3 million show and you're shooting second unit, there's a lot on the line again. It's like you get butterflies again. You basically only get butterflies driving in your car to set. And then once you get there, it's all just, you know, like I said before, muscle memory.
No, that's good advice.
It's like water skiing, you know. You just like pulled all those different muscles that you never used for like that year.
No, that's good advice. Surrounding yourself with people that know more than you.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense, and be open to learning absolutely. All the time and never think you know everything.
No, you can't. Nobody does, and you're always going to learn. Especially the DP, you're going to constantly learn. Mm-hmm. You learn with technology. And another thing, too, with the young guys, I wouldn't get all wrapped around technology. You know, get wrapped around your composition, the look and the lighting and how soft the light is. And is the light soft enough? Is it in the right place?
It's the emotional aspect.
Yeah.
Not so much the technical for exactly. the emotion.
Because a lot of kids now that come out with technical, they know everything about the sensor. They know everything about the 4K recorders. And like, I could honestly care less about that stuff. I need to know. Like, I keep reading up and I go to seminars and, you know, you're always reading the ASC magazine or the CSC magazine just to keep up with technology and what guys are doing. You know, but yeah, it's like, yeah, you don't, you know, that's why you have the best DIT guy. I don't want to know that. He's going to tell me and we're going to work together, right? So, that's why that's a great position these days, DIT and DMT. It's like.
It's a position now. It's a major position.
It's a huge position, you know. Like when we used to, you know, I can't say used to shoot film. It's like, it's still around, but, you know, when every job was film, you know, you basically were going in at wrap and doing your one lights. And then when you got more confidence, you were sending the colorist your email and then he knew your stuff, or we taking, you know, the digital stills and doing a bit of color correction on your computer at lunch, you know, and sending some rough stills in. But yeah, now it's like right there. Actually, the second unit shows I've been doing, we don't. We just, the cards just go off. There's no DMT. Basically hot, they're like hot mags. They're gone. They just go right to Deluxe or Technicolor and that's it. Hmm. They get colored, they just... You know, it depends if there's a LUT or Rec 709 or whatever it is, you know. So, but.
You know, fix anything.
It's, they just, yeah, it's, if there's any problems, you hear it down the pipe.
That's right.
You know? But you know your problems on set now. If there's a problem, everyone got 12 heads looking at a screen, right? It's like, there's three rows of director's chairs behind you and everyone's watching. So if somebody didn't catch it, then, you know, it went through that many people before.
The quarter. Because
it's, yeah, well, it's true, commercials, but there's so much, there's so much you do as a DP. It's like, you know, you're these days more so than in the. Do you still have time?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. No.
It's now that you're like, okay, so you arrive. You know, the guy hands the AD hands you your sides. You're blocking with the director. You and your operator checking the blocking out, making sure it's gonna work in every spot. You're doing the remarks. Then you light it. Then you tweak it. Then a rehearsal with seconds. Then you're at the monitor doing quality control. You're like watching the focus, watching everybody, watching the frames, watching the composition. It's just like. There's just no time. It's just like everything is just so compact. This is episodic. It's like there's a lot to do in a day,
yeah,
man.
Stamina,
it's like when
stamina.
You drive, when you get to your car, it's like, whoa.
You want to turn off when you get home.
You know, it's just like, wow, what a day. You know, and usually when I drive away these days, it's like, that was a great day, you know. And that's what the joy of this job is, man. It's like, you can't say that a lot of people get in their vehicle or get on transit after a day's work and say, boy, that was a great day. And you do in this job. And if you're a DP and you lose that, then you need to move on to something else. You just better start directing. Because even going through film school, everyone wants to be a director. And then I hear that, you know, sometimes kids just become the DP because they're shooting all the short films, but they wanted to be the director, but then they just become the DP. And it's just the other side of the craft, yeah. You know?
Well, that's a good way to end it. Good advice, yeah. And good thoughts. Thank you so much for your time, Brett.
No problem. And it was fun.
Thank you, Grayson Matthews, for the studio space.
I just want to say Grayson Matthews did all the music for Backstage, and Backstage would not be Backstage without the music. Because the music in the show is just phenomenal. All these kids recorded their own music. Grayson wrote everything. The kids in this show are amazing. Like the singing, they would be coming. Another thing with Backstage, they would be recording in a room, the tracks that they would be earwigging immediately for like us an hour later.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because I know when one of the girls is singing. So is it playback? I guess
it was a mixture of both. So a lot of the singers can't sing to playback. They don't want to sing to playback. We would give them earwigs for tempo. Basically, the music supervisors would come in, give them their click, give them their clap track or a metronome to kind of get the tempo to, and then a lot of them didn't even want earwigs. I think because they can't sing to the earwig or hearing themselves sing.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of, because to a trained kind of professional musician or singer, it's distracting. But yeah, it was a bit of playback. And then when there was dialogue in between singing, it would be earwigs to keep them on tempo.
This has been the Canadian Society of Cinematographers podcast. The CSC is a nonprofit organization that has been promoting the art and craft of cinematography in Canada since 1957. Find out more by logging on to thecsc.ca. Thank you for joining us.